So I said, I'll talk to Senator Pappas.
There you go.
You know, maybe we can transfer funds.
Okay, good afternoon. Call Laura Mead, State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, February 24, 2010. We are continuing to review the governor's supplemental budget proposals. Keep in mind that there's going to be the budget forecast coming out next week, which may or may not affect some of the proposals that have already been made to us, but we gotta still get a better idea of what the governor is proposing here. I wanted to look at, take a closer look at some of the items that was in the supplemental budget. The first item is on the gambling control board, and if you, in your packets, you've got governor's recommendations on page 58 of your packets. That is the gambling control board. And Mr. Barrett, welcome back to the budget division. Please identify yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the gambling control board and appreciate the opportunity to come before you and provide a little insight in relation to the revised budget proposal. If it's all right with you, I thought I'd do a very brief background of who it is, who we are, and some of the implications.
I think we're familiar with you, but it doesn't help to remind us some of the things that you have to do. So go ahead.
Yep, fair enough. Thank you. What it is we regulate is all the charitable gaming. In last fiscal year, that represented approximately 2,800 sites, roughly 1,800 organizations, and a $1.1 billion in terms of gross receipts. Minnesota used to be number one in the country. It's now number two. The state of Ohio decided to start looking at some of the bingo receipts, and they actually are a little higher than Minnesota. But while we're number two in the country, we're still one of the smallest in terms of regulation. For every dollar spent on a pull tab, one quarter of one penny comes back to us in the way of the regulations. We've just achieved last fiscal year an audit cycle of getting out to the organizations on average once every 2 years. A few years back was over 3 years, so we've made many improvements in that sense working with the industry, but there's been a lot of good regulatory changes as well. We streamlined a lot of the reporting requirements. There's been allowances granted in law changes to give the charities more opportunities by way of the game formats, how they run the charitable gambling games, as well as what they use the money for. But back in 2003, we were, up until that time, funded through the general fund. And that was a time similar to what we're seeing now, where a lot of cuts, layoffs. And so the concern was the gross receipts, the activity in charitable gambling was on the rise. Back then it was $1.4 billion. and we were losing regulatory oversight. So we switched to dedicated funding. This is with the support of the charities that we regulate. And it seemed to be somewhat of a win-win. Well, since 2005, the receipts started dropping in terms of the activity. Not necessarily the number of organizations or the sites, but just the activity. Since 2005, receipts have dropped roughly $300 million annually. So recognizing those changes happening in the industry, we did some internal cuts in anticipation of the decreased revenue. And so when the time came for the direction of all state agencies to come up with proposed cuts, 3%, 6%, we had already put in place a couple of cuts. We're 84% funded in salaries, so there wasn't much to look at other than the staffing. So we were holding a couple of positions vacant, and those were the positions that we offered up in terms of addressing our decrease in the activity. What we didn't expect was the value of those, the value of the decrease in our operating to take the funds out of our dedicated funds. And that's where I think, whether you've heard or not, but as soon as that became public, we had charities calling the Gambling Control Board basically saying, we want our money back. We gave the money for regulatory fees, and now we understand it's going to the general fund, not for what it was paid for. And these are groups, obviously veterans, the youth activity, those folks. And it's one of those things to be mindful of when they paid the fee, because we know there's sensitivity to the taxes paid by the charities as it relates to charitable gambling. But there is support when we went forward into the dedicated fund to say, we want to have the regulators out. We want to have them out more frequently, which is always nice to hear. But understanding the time's difficult for everyone. But what we're concerned about is the time with decreased receipts in charitable gaming as well as other places, but an increased need and what the proceeds are used for. So we're definitely coming to a crossroads in terms of our operation, the industry we're regulating. And I would anticipate probably the next biennial budget cycle, if nothing changes this session, the activity stays the same way, we'd probably be coming back to say we're going to propose these changes or actually look at a fee adjustment. We haven't adjusted our fees since the dedicated fund was first proposed back in 2003. So it's one of those things. I know we're one of the biggest in terms of operations in the country and one of the smallest in terms of regulations. The cuts we did, we had already prepped for internally. But I think the focus, what you might be hearing about, is the transfer of the value of those funds out of the dedicated, out of our bank account, and into the general fund. That covers pretty much our operation as it relates to the regulatory. In addition, something new this last cycle was the transfer of the problem gambling grant money. Previously, that was under the administration of the Department of Human Services. That operation administratively was transferred to the Gambling Control Board. And in the proposed budget, there's also a proposed reduction in terms of the $50,000 related to the contingency amount. The direction was to the North Star Problem Alliance, where they would seek out additional support for their operation. Anything that they were able to gather could be offset with a matching grant up to $50,000. And I know there's representatives here from North Star as well that might want to respond if you had any questions in that respect.
And I think somebody does wish to testify. We'll get to them momentarily.
Yeah.
Mr. Barron, okay, if you have this proposed 3% reduction, is that going to affect your oversight over some of the current gambling operations in Minnesota? With no expansion of gambling, just everything exactly as it is, how is that going to affect your ability to monitor what's going on out there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it will affect. We're already, like I said, we're currently holding two positions from our compliance side, the auditors. These are the ones that get out to the sites in terms of checking the books, making sure the payments. We hit our two-year cycle. That was a good thing. It was kind of our goal and our strategic plan. Holding this position vacant, we anticipate that that'll rise up past the two-year mark again.
Now, I don't know what's going to play out in this legislative session, but, you know, there's been discussion about Racino, there's been electronic bingo, there's slot machines and bars. I mean, who knows how it's going to play out. But I take it if we have in any bills that approve those kind of things that become law, that increases your business?
Mr. Chairman, it depends on which proposal would be considered. An example of a Racino bill under the authority of both, I believe, the Racing Commission and the Minnesota State Lottery. That would have an impact on our operation, simply the expectation that we would see another decrease in charitable gaming receipts given the opportunity to go somewhere else. So in terms of our own operation over charitable gaming, we see it a negative effect in terms of decreased activity, decreased receipts. If it's an electronic bingo, electronic pull tab, those things are direct related to the industry we oversee, and yes, there'd be a increase in terms of expected operations, expected receipts, and expected oversight.
Thank you, Senator Cooley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Barrett, you know, I guess I've just been curious lately. Does your board have folks at the tribal casinos?
Mr. Sure. Chair, Senator Cooley, no. And that's one of the oversights, or not oversight, but overviews I normally give is one of the things, and the only thing we do is provide the regulatory oversight for charitable gaming. We have no oversight with the tribal casinos, the horse track, the card rooms, or the lottery, but we do work close with regulators in each one of those respective industries, as well as the tribal. We have issues when we might see a bad pull tab game that's manufactured by a company that supplies both charities as well as the tribal locations, and so we'll share information in that sense.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Barrett, so you do... You do have some regulatory authority over the pull tabs that are sold there in that setting. Is that correct?
Mr. Barrett?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cooley, in that respect, I would say no. The tribal's entities are free to order their pull tabs from whoever. It just, when we know that we found a problem with a particular tab, we will share that information. It doesn't happen often, so don't get...
Oh, okay.
But we would, but it's more of a just a... a mutual sharing if we found this issue to be aware of.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Barrett. I guess I was just seeking information from a couple of complaints I've gotten in my district, so appreciate the accurate information. Thank you.
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Barrett, I know the lottery uses digital signs. Then how often are the digital signs changing? How many seconds? Do you happen to know?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I know the lottery is coming up next, but that's one of those a very good question.
That's the lottery? Okay, yep. Can you talk to the lottery people about that?
Yeah, or say the word and we'd be happy to regulate them.
The lottery is next to the
agenda. I'll ask the lottery people. Sorry.
Okay, well, there is somebody who wants to testify. Any other questions, Mr. Barrett? I'm told there's a Mr. Wilson who wanted to testify. Is he here?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is King Wilson. I'm the executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. We are the trade association that represents the organization that Mr. Barrett's agency oversees. And he actually, I think, did a very fine presentation. I just want to let you know that, as he said in 2003, I would say we reluctantly went along with the fee structure because we do see the importance of having good regulation, having them get out as often as they can, because I think it's both good for the state and for the charities. We're very concerned when we saw the governor's rec come out that was going to take some money out of the dedicated fund. You know, the charities have been paying that money, and the intent of that money was to fund the agency. And it's just our concern that if we shift it from there to the general fund, that that really is nothing more than a tax. And as I'm sure many of you already know, you know, the last fiscal year we paid $38 million in taxes. Those are taxes that are paid by nonprofit tax-exempt organizations, which is basically a double the rate for profit businesses. But you know, that's another day, another story. The dedicated fund was designed to keep the agency whole. I think we all recognized in 2003 that
general fund
deficits there that it would. See, it was just going to get to the point where it was going to be the law of diminishing returns. If the Gambling Control Board would have seen cuts like other agencies were seeing, it was going to get to the point where it was going to be detrimental to the organizations and to the state. So I think it was a fair compromise. But to know that that money that was put in this fund that's there so that the charities could be regulated properly and efficiently, to see that being shifted away so it's not there for them to do their mission, I think is just not well-serving for the charities that I represent.
And, you know, I was looking at the governor's supplemental budget on page 58, and I don't see a description of that happening, but Mr. Lundin says it is in there, but you got to know what you're looking at, Mr. Lundin.
Yeah, so if you take a look at page 58, the operating budget reduction, you see on the general fund there's a transfer in of $51,000 in 2010 and $88,000 in fiscal year 11. And then you see the transfer out of the special revenue fund there. There's two lines for the special revenue, but essentially what's happening is we're just transferring money from the special revenue account into the general fund. Well, it's just going into the general fund.
Right.
So it's but it's cutting the budget for
the gambling
control.
Gambling paying a fee which was intended to pay for the auditors, but it's going to go to the general fund. It doesn't quite say that that's what's happening, but apparently that's what it is. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I think, too, that we need to be keenly aware, not only with regard to the Gambling Control Board, which operates with a special fund supported by the people who are regulated by it, but that that's also happening, once again, with the airport fund. Those dollars are going to be transferred out that have been paid for by registration fees and fuel taxes and whatever to go into the general fund. And then also the fire safety account, even though that's not an account that comes here, that's paid for by all of us on our homeowners' insurance. And with the expectation that it's going to firefighter training, and that fund just recently got up to its the level that it needs to be in order to then send those funds out for firefighter training. And the governor's proposal, administration proposal, also suggests taking that special revenue fund and dedicated fund and transferring it into the general fund. So this is one instance of it, but it's happening in a number of dedicated funds as well. And I think we just need to be real careful about the message that we're sending out about dedicated funds, and even if as a, you know, really good fiscal policy, dedicated funds are not the best. Nevertheless, when they're set up, there's kind of a promise made, and this is a promise here and in some others that that's being broken, and we just need to be really, really careful about approving that rather than just doing cuts to the general fund, period, rather than attacking the special revenue funds, which are for a dedicated purpose.
Well, I've been getting my share of emails, and I'm sure you have too, from people on snowmobiles, that they're paying a fee for the trails. And when I heard about it, I looked through this whole document, and I thought, I can't find it. So it's you got to know where you're looking for. Apparently, within our area, it also shows up under the Racing Commission. Mr. Lundin, could you, bottom page 62?
Yeah, on page 62 under the Racing Commission, there's a transfer out of the Special Revenue Fund into the General Fund. And essentially, it's the same thing that's happening with the Gambling Control Board. It's dedicated fee revenue that goes in to support that commission, and it's a cut.
Mr. Lundin, where do the dollars come from for that special fund? Who pays that in?
John Dean.
That's being paid through the horse racing and the card clubs, and then it gets deposited into an account that then supports the Racing Commission.
So the tracks.
The tracks. Pay that? Yeah, there's a number of occupational
and the purpose
fees
of it
and.
Is for what?
It's for regulatory oversight.
For regulatory oversight.
Senator Grobling.
Thank you. And I was wondering with this with the snowmobile too account, is it a percent of what they have, or how has it been determined how much is going to come out of any of these accounts? Has there been a pattern? I don't know if any of
I'm not familiar with that particular issue. As I say, I try to find it, and now I get a better idea, you know, of what's happening here with these dedicated funds, but I don't even know where that shows up. So.
I think generally it's been a 3% of kind of the unspent funds in fiscal year 10 and then 3% of the operating budget in fiscal year 11. I think it's supposed to, I think the rationale behind it was the same cuts that the general fund were taking. The governor decided to take these to the special revenue or other funds operating budgets.
So, Mr. Chair, so if it's a small amount, like in the Racing Commission at $19,000, right, it's just, that's what we're talking about when we see the 19. So the fund is not real large.
No.
Because the amount for the snowmobile group was much bigger than
$300,000, something like that, yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, too, I think whenever that we see the numbers, we also have to look at what does this represent in terms of the budget, that part of the budget that the special revenue funds are supporting. And we can say $19,000 isn't very much, but if it's $19,000 out of $50,000,
right,
that's a huge cut. And I think we're going to hear that with regard to problem gambling, that's a huge cut to percentage-wise to the operations for dealing with problem gambling. So 3% doesn't exactly, it sounds fine, except when you look at the dollars that it amounts to for the operation of a program. And I think it's, you know, I agree that it's hard to figure. I mean, until you or until we're educated about what this transfer in, expenditure, transfer out language means, I didn't know how to read it at first, so.
Senator Roebling?
No, that's what I was just wanting to know, if that 19,000 was 3% of that whole fund that was sitting there for that year, but then how does it grow to 29,000 the next year? Were they expecting more revenues?
Mr. Lundin?
The way the governor's budget was put together in fiscal year 10, they were taking 3% of the unspent funds. So since we're partway into the fiscal year, it's only on those dollars that were unspent. But when you get to fiscal year 11, it was the entire amount of the appropriation in most cases.
Legislatures don't normally like, not just this one, all legislatures just don't like dedicated funds. I mean, they like to have general funds come in and then appropriate it accordingly. But if you have a dedicated fund, I think there's an implied promise it's going to be used for the purpose. Now, constitutionally, like the gas tax has to be used for that, but I guess there's no prohibition in redirecting it. But, boy, it raises questions, you know, when we do that. So.
Well, and Mr. Senator Chairman, it is, with regard to the charities, why should they believe us again, ever, on if they participate in a program that that we say is going to benefit the whole industry, and then we take the money, if I were Mr. Wilson and his group, I would be in here opposing any other attempt to do dedicated funding because they can't trust us.
Anything further? Well, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Okay, the other next item we have is the recommendations for the state lottery. And
testimony? So there was somebody here testifying about them.
Problem gambling? Is somebody here on problem gambling? Somebody want to test? We can back up. Okay. Yeah, because the problem gambling grants are being cut under this too. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kathy Peralta, and I'm the executive director of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance, and we're a nonprofit agency. We are gambling neutral. We work solely on the issue of problem gambling through education, research, and advocacy. This year, our grant has been, we are administratively report to the Gambling Control Board, as Mr. Barrett said. And we were notified that our grant for fiscal year, the next fiscal year, would be reduced by $50,000. That's a 22% cut in our budget, which seems a bit out of proportion to a lot of the other things that have been discussed. We certainly would want to see that restored as much as possible. And a lot of the work we've do or what we've done in the last year particularly has been with probation officers. We do training with probation officers so that they can help people that they're dealing with who are get into gambling issues. And if we can divert even one or two of those people from the correction system, I think that would be a good investment. Also, if the legislature does do any expansion of gambling, I'm also going to be advocating for an expansion of funds for the problem gambling issue for both our agency's education awareness and for treatment.
So how did it work out? I mean, we spent a bit of time about a year ago trying to move the grants from the Department of Human Services under the board here. I mean, were there any secondary issues to doing that? Or, I mean, it's just the money's disappearing now. I understand that part.
To the best of my awareness, no, there have been no issues. I came on board as the executive at North Star in October, and that switch had already happened. I've been working with Mr. Barrett regularly, and the administration of the grant is going very well.
Thank you. Senator Jungbauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess apparently I came in right at the right moment. I was just talking to some constituents about gambling and issues. And when the way you said it, expansion of gambling, should the legislature do any expansion of gambling, that's always a curiosity to me. So maybe you can help me through that, because the research that I've read on gambling is you don't you don't really expand it, that a certain segment of society gambles, and today, if they don't find what they're looking for in Minnesota, they're going across the borders to other states to gamble and coming back here, and we deal with the problem without the revenue generated in our state in order to supplement these programs. Can you expound on, am I missing something on that?
If you happen to know, Ms. Perled.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I do not know that data. In the period of time that I've been involved with North Star, I have not been able to dig into that level of research, so I don't have an answer for you. I can certainly do some and find out.
Be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else who wants to be heard on the Gambling Control Board recommendations? Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Perled.
Thank you.
Okay, then we also have the recommendations for the state lottery. Mr. Feeney, welcome to the Budget Division. Will you please identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Don Feeney. I am the Research and Planning Director for the Minnesota State Lottery. Let me first apologize. Clint Harris, the Executive Director of the Lottery, is tending to a family medical issue and cannot be here today. Let me, again, this is not the way I like to start a presentation. Let me again apologize that much of the information that I would like to present to you today is contained in the revenue forecast, which is being issued next week, and I've been advised that I really shouldn't, that I can't scoop that.
Sure.
And so my remarks are going to have to be a little more general in nature than I would prefer that they be. And I'm going to limit my remarks to lottery finances and really not get into any aspects of operations at this point as well. I'm assuming that would be your preference. We're in an interesting situation with our economic climate, as I'm sure you're aware. And for us to maintain our revenues has been a considerable challenge. Most of the lotteries around the country have seen their sales and their revenues decline. We are one of the very few exceptions. From fiscal 08 to fiscal 09, the revenues to the state, what a business would call profits, grew from $116 million to almost $120 million. That's a 3% growth rate. And that actually places us fourth in the country in terms of the of growth in revenues. And the three states that are ahead of us all had some exceptional circumstances that I can use to explain that, which would not likely be repeated. If you look at the total number of states that I have revenue figures, growth figures for 35 states, 29 of those 35 showed revenue declines over the past year. I'm feeling very, very good about a 3% growth. You may remember several years ago the legislative auditor compared us, decided there were eight lotteries, state lotteries, that were comparable to Minnesota. Of those eight comparable states, last year Kentucky had a growth rate of 6%, which I think largely is reflected in some changes in legislation that they made. Louisiana matched our growth rate at 3%. They're still recovering from Hurricane Katrina. They had an enormous decline after that. The other six states that we were compared to had revenue declines ranging from 2% in Colorado to an 18% decline in Indiana. We expect that when fiscal 10 is complete, we will contribute over $123 million. That's the pace we're on right now. That's another 3% increase. Looking at the big picture, from fiscal 03 to fiscal 10, we have increased our return to the state by 55%. I don't have the numbers on this, but I would be astounded if there is another state other than the new startups that can match that that level of increase. What I think this shows is that we've invested the resources that we've been given very wisely. It's also coming at a time when gambling overall is down. From what Mr. Barrett said, you know that pull tabs alone have decreased more than lottery sales have increased. We also know that revenues are flat or declining at the racetrack, at the card club, and anecdotally at the tribal casinos, and certainly that's a trend that's true nationally. Again, I am feeling pretty good about where we are, but that also shows that these are increases that we cannot take for granted. We've been innovative in our product development, we've been strategic in our marketing, we've been very mindful of the need for efficiency in our operations. And we fully recognize that just growing sales by itself is not the aim. We need to grow our revenues to the state. That is more important than an increase in sales. We expect that our proceeds are going to continue to rise in fiscal 11. We expect that this will be reflected in the revenue forecast being issued next week. A lot of this is going to come from new products. You've probably heard about the Mega Millions game that was introduced in Minnesota a couple of weeks ago. It's a game that is very similar to Powerball. It was previously played in 11 states that did not offer Powerball. These are big states, Texas, California, and the like. Whereas Powerball was primarily played in the smaller states, 33 states or territories around the country. And we came to an agreement with them that we would sell their game, they would sell ours. Not every state's participating, but many are. It's a big jackpot game. The biggest difference between the two games is their drawings are Tuesday and Friday. Powerball's drawings are Wednesday and Saturday. We're projecting that next year we will sell $46 million in Mega Millions tickets. We know that a lot of that will come from sales that otherwise would have gone to Powerball. There are people who are just going to buy depending on which jackpot is higher at any given time. But we are expecting some new money as a result. If we weren't, we wouldn't do it. But the bottom line on that is we expect new sales after the loss in Powerball is calculated in to be $11 million, and that will result in $5 million in new revenue solely from the Mega Millions game. And that $5 million, of course, will be split between the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, the General Fund, and under current legislation, Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources Fund. There will be, of course, changes in other products as well. Some of those will be up. Some of those are down, reflecting changing market conditions. The jackpot games, we are very dependent on, obviously, jackpots. We've had to lower our expectations on Powerball and Mega Millions, but this year, because the jackpots have been lower than we would mathematically expect. Fiscal 08, we had six drawings where there were jackpots in excess of $200 million, and we had one drawing where there's a jackpot in excess of $300 million. So far in fiscal 10, we've had only two drawings in excess of $200 million and none in excess of $300 million. That affects revenues, and there is nothing we can do about that. That is strictly a function of randomness, and sometimes randomness works for you, sometimes it works against you. We've introduced some other new products. One I want to point out to you are these game books. Actually, if someone could pass these out to the members. It's a scratch game where we put multiple games, in this case eight games, into one book. I can promise you the games that are being passed out right now have absolutely no winning tickets in them. But this has been out for 2 weeks. It's proving to be tremendously popular. We actually, last week alone, we sold $1.5 million in these. Our customers see this as a great value. It's something that they can spend 15-20 minutes on as opposed to a minute or two on a more traditional scratch ticket, and they are enjoying these tremendously. We continue to look for new products. We will certainly have some during the next fiscal year. I don't know yet what those are going to be. We very much appreciate that we have a budget system that allows us the flexibility to respond to new opportunities as they become available. Other states don't have that flexibility, and there are some states that, for example, cannot introduce either Powerball or Mega Millions for 6 months until they get into a new fiscal year, obtain a new line item in their budget, and that is 6 months' worth of revenue that they will never get back. And I'm very grateful that we are in the situation that we are. We certainly have reviewed our operating expenses. We have gone through our fiscal 11 operating budget and identified more than $1 million that we can cut from that, and that will be reflected in the budget forecast. That's about 3.5%. Most of that is coming from some advertising money that we decided we could do without and salaries. There are some things some cost increases that will offset some of that. The most notable one is bad debt. Our bad debt expense has gone from $81,000 in fiscal 06 to $312,000 in fiscal 09. That's largely from store closings and bankruptcies. It's a trend that we are hoping has peaked and will at least now stabilize and not reverse itself, but we're not counting on it. We like to budget conservatively. We would much rather be pleasantly surprised than bitterly disappointed. Our remaining discretionary funding is largely in the marketing area. We strongly believe that any further cuts in that area would be counterproductive. We would not be able to introduce the new products that we rely on to maintain and grow revenue. That's a brief discussion of our finances, and I'd certainly be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Feeney. You know, as we were going through the supplemental recommendations last week, and I realize this might tie into things that you can't talk about until the budget forecast comes out next week, but I have some questions about the governor's proposal, and I recognize you may not be able to talk about this either. But when the governor said, well, we'll have an assumed $5 million for potential increased revenue from the implementation of new lottery games, I thought, well, okay, if you have some, say, a new lottery game that gets you $5 million, why can't you have 20 lottery games and get that much more? What's diminishing returns? I recognize that. So are you referring to the Mega Millions as the source of this new lottery stream? Because it seems, as Senator Jungbauer indicated, it's the same money moving around. Introducing a new game doesn't necessarily put more money in the system.
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't necessarily, and introducing new games for the sake of introducing new games would not. It's very much a question of which new games that you introduce. We don't do that in a vacuum. We ask our customers what they would like, what they would like to see more of. We look for products. We look at the return on investment of new products. There are plenty of new products out there that we think would sell well, but that would cost us more to offer. We will not go there unless we know that there is an increased profit that will result. For that to be a zero-sum game, as you refer to, that would imply that the market for lottery products per se is saturated. I don't believe that it is, particularly if you look at sales from other states. Yes, we have grown. We've grown considerably, which obviously demonstrates that the market has not been saturated for the last several years. But we are still in the bottom half of lotteries around the country in per capita sales. That tells me that there is room for growth in the market. You are correct. There are diminishing returns that we can, if we introduce 20 new games, no, we would not get 20 times that amount. It's something that we have to do judiciously, that we have to be careful not to overextend our market, there's very much a risk of confusing customers with too many new products at any one time. We have to stagger introductions. We have to choose our products very, very wisely. If we don't think that there's a new product out there that will grow our market, we will not introduce one. We like to try to plan about a year out as best we can. We like to remain open for the possibility of something new coming up, as what happened when the negotiations over Mega Millions suddenly bore fruit. But no, I think there is room to grow the market. It is certainly not unlimited. People certainly have limited discretionary dollars.
On a different point, regardless of which game it is, you've got the overhead to pay. The prize is the big one. But you've got the security, the distribution, the printing, all that other stuff. But when you get your net profit, of course, part of it goes to the environment, part goes to the general fund. So if we were to dedicate a game towards, like, a stadium or something like that, basically the money would come out of the general fund because, you know, if we're dedicating the money, this is money that would not otherwise go to the general fund because we're earmarking it. So it wouldn't really matter if we said this lottery ticket is going to fund a particular thing, as opposed to if we just had it go to the general fund anyway and made the appropriation. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chairman, that's a very fair statement.
Okay. So those people think we're going to build a Viking stadium and lottery tickets is probably needs a little bit of work, I would think. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's up to you.
Okay. Any other questions about the lottery? Anybody else who's here to talk about them? Okay, thank you very much. And then we have the government of supplemental budget recommendations for the Department of Administration. We have Commissioner Rieger. We're Matt again. Welcome back to the Budget Division. And this is on pages 53 and 54 of the governor's supplemental budget.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sheila Rieger, and I'm the commissioner at the Department of Administration. thank you for the invitation to come and present the effects of the budget reductions on the Department of Administration. Just as a quick background, some of you may know that our budget is actually less than 7% of our budget is generally funded. We operate a lot of businesses more in the internal service fund area. But in our planning for how to make these cuts, we looked at a number of things. We looked for, really first, opportunity to reduce costs with minimal impact to the public and to our customers. I think that's what we're certainly all about. We looked at questions such as, does the activity that we're providing or considering cutting fulfill a statutory obligation? Are the agencies able to perform the work on their own? Can private sector provide the service more efficiently? And finally, is the service valuable to the enterprise and should it continue? So those are questions that we continually ask ourselves, not only in our general fund operations, but also in our internal service fund operations. In admin, as in most all of the other agencies, we're past the point of being able to absorb cuts by making cross-the-board cuts, tightening our belts, and so forth. We're now at the point where reductions mean program, real program changes, and changing the way we do business. Lenore Madigan is here, as our finance director, and she'll walk you through the figures in a minute, but I just want to mention first that the primary reduction we're proposing is to change the business model and how we operate our state resource recovery program. That's our recycling services. The recycling program was put in place first in 1983 or 1984. That was some time ago, and at that time, recycling was new, and we really focused on education and promotion and bringing recycling program into the forefront of agencies' minds. We put in policies and procedures and goals and worked very hard to establish that program and to get participation. Since 1984, recycling has really become a way of life for all of us, both in our standard way we live and in how we do business. It's evolved now into a program that's really more operational in nature. How do we pick up the goods? How do we take care of them, return them back, et cetera? So we're really proud of the state recycling program. We've come a long way since 1984, and we've been really very successful in meeting our goals. We're proud to say that collectively we recycle more than 3.4 million pounds of cans, bottles, cardboard, and plastic each year. That's all of us in this room together. But we know these are tough budget times, and that's what brings us to the proposal that you have in front of you, and that is to look at an alternative model to provide these services. This is not to eliminate recycling service at all, but rather provide it in a different manner and permanently reduce the general fund allocation by $327,000. By the way, there is current statutory language that gives us this flexibility in how we provide the services. It includes contracting with private entities if it's cost effective to do so. So we are exploring other models that we hope will result in cost reductions and move the program to a fee-for-service model, thereby removing it from the general fund obligation. So Lenore will walk you through more of the reduction items, and then we'll answer any questions you have.
Could you again describe how the fee-for-service program would work then? Give me a little bit more information about that.
Okay. Certainly, Mr. Chair, members. Well, we envision a couple different models to take a look at. One that comes to mind is to go out with an RFP and offer that to other private industry who are offering recycling services, and then do a comparison to see how does that service and those costs compared to the service that we provide in-house. If there are significant cost reductions, that would be a model we would consider moving toward. In that instance, we would have presumably this outside business then billing agencies for the recycling service, similar to how you do it at your home or any other business. Right now, we provide the service under the general fund, so agencies are not paying separately, and the general fund is covering that cost in full. whereas we have other types of funding, as you know, in state government, federal funding, internal service funds, and so forth, that we are not using at this point to cover those costs. That's just one model. Okay. We are looking also at retaining the service in-house, but looking at making some changes that might become more cost-effective, but also moving to that internal service fund.
Okay. Anything further on this topic? Anything further on this topic? I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Ms. Madigan?
Members? Admin is about $11 million in general fund dollars, and the 3% reduction, as Commissioner Rieger outlined, is $327,000. That's identified on page 53. That $325,000 is a permanent, ongoing base reduction to the State Recycling Center. The supplemental budget also provides a one-time transfer in fiscal year 10 of $209,000. This is from Office Supply Connections contributed capital funds. These funds were originally appropriated to the business in 1979. At that time, it was called Central Stores. As you may be aware, we have shut down that operation, and we are in the process of closing the books, and we knew that the contributed capital was no longer needed for this operation, so we're able to return that to the general fund. There's also some transfers out from special revenue accounts. That amount totals $7,000. That's also on page 53. And this is a combination of three smaller items. The first one is we operated a commuter van program. It was a pretty small program within the Department of Administration, and about 2 years ago we worked with the Met Council to have them take over the administration of the program. There is a balance on this account of around $1,700, and it is no longer needed, and so could be canceled. There's
Chair?
Also another.
Oh, sir, we'll see.
In regard to the central stores, that wasn't general fund money in the first place, was it?
Ms. Madigan?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen. Yes, in 1979, there was a contributed capital appropriation to the Department of Administration, and at that time it was Central Stores, and it was general fund money.
If I may, Mr. Chair, but that wasn't ongoing operational money, right? That wouldn't have been that one-time setup money, or was that an annual?
It was one-time money, but it was not ever used. It was a balance in the account, and the account was successful, and it remained in the account.
So if I may do a follow-up, so if the store was operating and raising revenue, wouldn't it be beneficial just to leave it open, or wasn't it making money?
Mr. Chair, Senator,
sure.
A good question. That was startup money that's sitting in a fund. As you may know, Central Stores or Office Supply Connection served as kind of a middleman for office supplies. So we had contracts with other vendors. We would bring product in, stock it on our shelves, and then serve our agency people by taking orders and delivering and so forth. We looked at a model that was less expensive. We went through quite a process of evaluating how can we provide office supplies to our agency customers more efficiently. And we've done that by moving directly to the vendor, which, by the way, 48 other states have already done. So we made that change, and the business was actually taking, I would say, 25 to 27% of a up cost. So we were able to provide those same products or very close products to our customers for significantly reduced fees, costs. Therefore, we got out of the business, and that now we're able to return that contributed capital. Does that make sense?
Sure, we'll see.
One last question. Thank you. Is this what we've been talking about the last few years about, you know, statewide agencies or cities or other people can purchase things through the state, like on the state bid kind of stuff? Is that what is being replaced here?
This is one very small piece of that. This was one operation, but I think you're talking about much broader goods and services that are through our materials management division.
So, if I may, this kind of then became obsolete. Is that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Within the special revenue accounts, there's also an archaeology burial account. This account was established about 10 years ago, and it handled proceeds related to a book that had been published at that time. There's a balance of around $3,800 in that account, and that appropriation is, those funds are also no longer needed. And then last in this section is of special revenue is we have a utility rebate account, and there's approximately $50,000 in that account. And it was used by a real estate and construction services division, and they complete retrofit work, utility retrofit work. And this represents a 3% reduction in that account of around $1,500. So the account will continue, but it was reduced by 3%. Moving to the next page, there's grant reductions. On page 54, the recommendation is to reduce the self-advocacy grant by 6%. Last year's legislation directed admin to transfer the funds to DHS, and ultimately in the next biennium, this appropriation permanently moves to DHS. And for the current year, we transferred $127,000 to DHS for the self-advocacy grant. A 6% reduction on that in 2011, we will transfer around $119,000 for the self-advocacy work. And then, although it's handled by a separate committee, this also covers the reduction in or elimination of the public broadcasting grants. And then in the middle of page 54, we have an operating budget reduction. And this item is related to the unallotment, and it permanently reduces our real estate and construction services by $200,000. The reduction is possible because we have begun allocating project funding for the project managers to capital improvement projects. And only the time actually worked by the project manager is charged to that capital project. And that summarizes the admin changes.
Okay. Kind of a related topic, the bookstore comes under Department of Admin, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I have no feeling right now one way or the other whether it's making money, losing money, or whatever. Is that something that's in the mix here for looking at, you know, the long-term viability of it?
Mr. Chair, as a matter of fact, we are looking at the bookstore operation right now. It is not generally funded, so it isn't part of our proposal today.
Right.
But we do have staff that are taking a look at how to provide those services. Are we doing it most efficiently? Because of the economic times, we did experience a loss in fiscal year 2009. However, we think we're pretty well on track, but we are taking a look at that, and we'd be happy to report on that as we get further into that process.
Thank you. Any other questions for the department? Sir Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just following up on the bookstore, it seems like, you know, I'm glad you're looking at it because it seems like there might be other opportunities, maybe for the Historical Society or somebody to operate a bookstore and you know, other revenue streams. But did they used to do printing, or is that something that they haven't done for years?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we used to be actually in the printing business on a different part of the organization. That closed several years ago.
Okay, anything further? Anybody else is here? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that completes the agenda for today. we may be on track to have our budget recommendations out by the end of next week, so we're going to have to look very quickly at some of the major areas. On Monday...
He's not real, are they?
No. Monday, we've got the Department of Management and Budget, and the Department of Administrative Hearings. And as you may know, the governor is proposing to take some of the implied consent hearings from the courts and move them to administrative law judges, which is fairly easy to do on the budget sheets. But there's a big policy question that needs to be done here. And so far, there's no bill introduced to do that. So that raises a lot of questions here that we have to figure out. So. Anything else before today? We'll have a good weekend coming up, and I'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
Reading
a chair.
So
I don't have any good news for the college kids.
Actually, it makes me sound.